Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Tuesday, the 3rd of January of the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with filmmaker Lila Hebert about the premiere of his new film, Little Red Book. We'll also hear from Stoney Compton about his new novel, Treadwell. Michelle Amore will be here to talk about the Juneau Douglas High School Theater Department's trip to the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland. Writers Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for the rest of today, snow about 1 inch expected. Forecast for tonight, snow mixing with rain later on with 2 to 3 inches of snow expected. Forecast for Wednesday, rain and snow likely in the morning, then rain heavy at times in the afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley highlights successes for 2011 and looks to address new and ongoing issues in 2012. Shelley says the tribe last year had many good blessings and changes, including a new government, job creation, and new projects which beefed up the Navajo economy. He says this year he looks to continue to build a self-sufficient sovereign nation. One issue the president is looking to address is the Navajo clan system. The clan is how people identify themselves, operate, grow, and expand. It's an important guide for marriage. People in the same clan cannot marry. Shelley says the population of the Navajo people has grown, and when it comes to marriage, clans are running out. He says the tribe needs to look at how to address the clan system.
What tribal leaders are saying now when we talk about things is now is that to open the door to other tribes. Let our children, our young kids, marry other tribe. If they want to go, then they choose which tribe they want to be. So this is where we're at right now. We're at the tip of the clan where we cannot marry our sisters and brothers anymore. So we're at that very close to that. So we're running out of clan to marry, in other words. They're not related to us, so we open the doors to other nations. That's how we're talking that way now.
The clan system keeps the Navajo people unified as a family. The tribe has land extending into Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, covering more than 27,000 square miles. The Navajo Nation is one of the largest tribes in the country, with 300,000 members. Today, we begin a series on Native health and wellness. Many people's New Year's resolutions include health and wellness, whether it's training for a marathon or shedding some pounds. Alfreda Barton, the Wellness Center Coordinator at the Cejotzo Medical Center in Fort Defiance, Arizona, shares some tips on exercise. Barton says setting goals, making time for fitness, and having a plan can help you get on track to exercise. She says one of the most convenient and easiest exercises is walking.
Number one, it's wearing the right gear. Number two is hydration, drinking water before you exercise at least an hour and a half or two for hydration, and deciding on a path that's safe. Because one of the biggest fears is falling and a safe neighborhood where there's no dogs. Maybe the peak of the day would be warm, like noontime or midday, and not too much in the evening because it gets cold. Icy roads. This is for winter season, but there are many people right now that walking has been the most achievable thing.
Barton says her wellness team encourages people to walk at least 30 minutes a day, and it doesn't have to be all at once. She says it can be broken up into 10-minute segments throughout the day, walking at least 3 times a week at 60 to 70% of your heart rate. For weight loss, Barton says they encourage people to do cardiovascular exercise like walking 5 times a week. Barton says fitness is for a lifetime and it's important to make time. As a single parent herself with 3 kids, she makes time and encourages others to do the same.
Program yourself to say, during this time, I need to exercise. And call your personal time your me time, time for yourself, whether it's to be on the cardiovascular machines like the stepper, the bike, the elliptical. But it's time for you to reflect, time for you to really think about you. In this day and age, we are giving so much in our jobs, giving to our family, and yet we neglect ourselves.
Barton says if you're unsure about a fitness program, talk to people in your community, your local gym, or a personal trainer. Join us tomorrow as we hear some tips from the Wellness Center on healthy eating. On this day in 2001, nominations for the 43rd Grammy Awards were announced, including the debut of the Best Native American Music Album category. The first Grammy later that year went to the Gathering of Nations powwow. This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is filmmaker Lyle Hebert and longtime Juneauite. Lyle, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Thanks for inviting me, Jeff.
So tell me about your background in film. When I first met you, you were doing commercials.
Well, I always loved film. I used to live in Seattle when I was a young man and joined the Northwest Filmmakers Co-op and started learning how to make films there. And I came back up to Alaska to get a job so I could save money and buy film equipment, which I did. I worked as a truck driver and stowed away every bit of money I could get into equipment so I didn't waste it on other things. And it just happened to be in the days when the oil was gushing out of the ground and the state had a lot of money to have, documentaries made and stuff like that. And also I did a lot of political spots for various people.
Red Eye Movies.
Yep, Red Eye Movies.
What makes for a good film?
Well, I think that's probably a matter of taste. And it's a guessing game. But what makes a good film for me is something that I find original, kind of surprises me, and also reminds me of what's good about being alive.
How has the process of making a film changed since when you started doing it back in the 60s?
Oh, geez, radically. It's like going from, being a blacksmith working on horseshoes to, working on Maseratis. Now I switched from, using film. This is the first digital film I've made. And everything is so less cumbersome. It's so much faster and less expensive. It's a fraction of the price it used to be. The quality is very good. However, one of the problems I'm having right now, being kind of a Neanderthal working, in the 21st century, is that there have been some technical post-production problems that I didn't anticipate in regard to the sound, of this film we just made. So I'm delaying the showing of it, the commercial showing of it, for probably another month until I get that straightened out.
And the film is called Little Red Book.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit more about the process of making a film. Little things like continuity.
How do you mean? That's a big question, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I see that on the credits for movies, continuity. Could you define continuity?
Oh, yeah, continuity. Now I realize why I'm stumped on that one, because we didn't have anybody doing continuity on Little Red Book. Continuity person is a person who, makes sure that a guy in one scene is wearing the same thing that he's wearing in the next scene, if he's supposed to, be doing this during the same, period of time or something like this. A continuity person makes sure that things don't pop up in a scene that aren't supposed to be there. Let's say like a piece of film equipment or maybe some other personal belonging that doesn't belong to the character in the film. Just keeping the story intact without any unnecessary distractions.
What's the plot of Little Red Book?
Basically, there are two guys who work in a supermarket. They're bakers. One's a romantic who makes wedding cakes. The other is a cynic who makes donuts. They're called Amos and Butch. Amos, played by Ed Christian. Butch, played by Fred Wyler. Amos, after having a talk with Butch one day and telling him the wonders of marriage, goes home and finds his wife has left him. And he's basically just in free fall after that. And so the story is basically how they try to get Beulah, the wife, played by Holly Cockerell, to come back.
What's it like working with local talent?
It was amazing to me. You know, I was so surprised because, like, Ed's a very excellent and well-honed actor. You know, he's a wonderful actor. But most of the other people I work with, they don't really spend as much time acting, you know, but they came through, you know, and they added a lot to the story, which I didn't think it was even there, you know, just through things that they came up with when we were shooting, you know, their own personalities. And so it was very fun. It was great. I was really, that's the main thing about this whole experience for me was finding out how much people have in them that, you know, I was unaware of, and how much fun it could be, you know, once you kind of tap into the child inside, you know. And so we all just kind of got going with this thing. It was almost like a, you know, pretty spontaneous film. I mean, I had a script and everything, but it was just getting it together and getting different people to do different things and, you know, trying to find the right talent. And then, like, Brett Dillingham, for instance, has a scene that he plays, and after he did this thing, I had to go reread my script because it was just seems so, the scene seemed so really, really good, you know. And I looked at the script, and Brett had basically said everything I'd written, you know, but he put so much into this that I didn't even know it was there, you know, that he made it really, really a nice piece of film.
It's good to get good performances from local people who are also your friends.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of people who I asked to be in it, they had maybe had acting experience in high school or something like this, or in college. The reason I picked them or asked them is because they were fun people and had senses of humor, you know, and they were game to do it, you know. And I think that was a fairly good decision on my part.
What inspired you to make the film in the first place?
I needed, one of the things, I love making films, but it's been a really expensive hobby or line of work, you know, both at various times, because of film technology. You know, film cost a fortune. But then these digital cameras, you know, came up, and I know the guys at Lucid Reveries, you know, Pat and Aaron and Lou, and those guys work in that format. And I talked to them about, you know, cameras are pretty cheap. High definition digital cameras are pretty cheap compared to film stuff. So I decided I'd buy one with them. We went in halvesies on it and started making this thing. And I thought, gee, this is, you know, I could make a film now without hearing a cash register roaring in the background. And so this film is probably, it is the longest film I've ever made. It's 73 minutes. And it's also probably one of the cheapest films I've made, you know, and the most fun to do. It's like, you know, just like trying to, you know, if you're an artist going out with some paper and some pencils and making something beautiful out of it, you know, and not really, money's not being a consideration other than you having to eat. But I've got a job so I can eat. And so this has just been a really free experience, you know, a lot of fun. And I think the other people that helped out with it had a good time too. And the community has been tremendous. The people in this town who I asked, well, can I use your store for this scene or your restaurant for this scene? Everybody has been extremely generous in that regard.
It's interesting seeing local scenes in town here and being in one place and having them come out the door that you know is a different place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you don't have to worry about that if you're not familiar with, you know.
Yeah.
The role of music in a film with the preview that I saw had some well-crafted music in there. How do you select your music?
You know, my traditional way of doing it was I had several people in California who knew their job is making music for films, you know. But I didn't have any money to pay them this time. You know, so I went to try to find music, you know. And I wish in retrospect that I'd use more local musicians, because when I started doing that, they're very good musicians and they're fun to work with, you know, and a lot of them I think could have done a lot more for the film than music I actually use. However, I've got orchestral music in there that I got from My Source Music, where you get like a piece of orchestral mood music that runs maybe, let's say, 30, 40, 50 seconds and costs you $100, you know, which is very, very cheap for using orchestral music, you know. But the music is extremely important. I would say that music is about, can be 30 to 40% of the impact of a film once you add it. And I've been adding more music to the film, and it's made it better almost every time I've added more music to it.
Talking with Lyle Hebert, the filmmaker for a film called Little Red Book. It was, I'm going to have a preview this week, but it's been put off for a couple of weeks while Lyle puts the finishing touches on the movie. Do you have an idea when that might be?
It could be tomorrow, but we have the Gold Town Nickelodeon book for this weekend, but I can't. It's not in the shape. The film's not in the shape to show it this week, and I'd be ashamed if I tried to charge people money to come and see this thing with the sound problems we've got right now. So I want to delay it until we get all that stuff ironed out, so, you know, people have a good experience when they come to see it. So it should be within the next month.
What do you want people to take away from it?
I just want them to have had a good time. That's basically it.
And we'll stay tuned to June Afternoon, Lyle. We're welcome to come back on the show next time the film comes around and as an opening. Thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Nope. I'd just like to thank you for having me on the show, and also thank all the people at Juno who have been so helpful and enthusiastic about this.
Time is 3:19. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest will be talking to us from Corpus Christi, Texas. It's Tony Compton. He used to be a graphic artist here at the KTOO radio station, TV station, a number of years ago. He's had a variety of a career as an artist and an author. So Tony, thank you very much for coming down to the station today electronically.
My pleasure entirely, sir.
So your new work is called Treadwell. It's a novel of Alaska Territory.
Yes. It's the newest thing I've had published, or that I have published, yes.
Before we get into the interview itself, could you give us your background as an artist and an author? Where you've been since you left Juneau?
Oh, boy. Well, I went to work for the state of Alaska while I was still in Juneau, and then the job transferred to Anchorage. I was working with the API 2000 project, which ended up not doing much. And I left Alaska in 1998 to be closer to my mom, who was dying of cancer, basically, in Colorado. And 4 months after I got down there, she passed away. So it was worth leaving. And then things happened. It took me a year to get out of Colorado, and I went to work in the Seattle area for NOAA as a visual information specialist, which is government-ease for graphic artist. Worked there for a couple of years, and then in the private sector for 8 years, and then got laid off with this lovely economy, and just finished up 26 months down in Nevada working for the Air Force as a visual information specialist, and now I'm an illustrator for the Sinatra, which is Chief Naval Air Training here in Corpus Christi at the Naval Air Station. We work on training manuals, training products for NAVCADs, MARCADs, Naval Air Cadets.
Your latest work is called Treadwell, a Novel of Alaska Territory. What gave you the basic idea to, in the first place, to work on this?
Well, when I was there in Juneau in 1980, when we had the centennial, they came out with Hard Rock Gold, the book. And I read that, and it was a very well done overview of what the mining industry was like over the years in Juneau. And in there they had, which I later read in the original, a three-page typewritten letter from the wife of the lift operator at the Treadwell the night it caved in 1917. And in those three pages, she talked about what it was like to come there originally as a young married woman, and to live in Treadwell, what the social situation was like and what it was like to be there, how magnificently modern it was for being in the middle of this pristine wilderness, etc. And she never signed it. We don't even know her name. But she made that place breathe in three pages, and it blew me away. And I decided I want to write a novel about this time and place that breathes like this does. So that's what gave me the impetus.
And it's based on actual events?
Yes and no. Mostly.
Mostly yes or mostly no?
The mostly yes is the Krause case. There was an Edward Krause who was a serial killer. They know he killed at least three people, maybe as many as two dozen. He was really good at it. He would take them, he'd go on hunting trips and whatever, and they wouldn't come back, and he would. He went up into the, this was back in 1915, 1914, 1913. Well, he kidnapped a guy from the Treadwell who worked in the amalgamation room, which is the last process of turning it into gold bars. And you don't mess with the you didn't mess with the Treadwell like that. And the guy was also a Mason, and I think in the Odd Fellows. Those societies were really big then, much bigger than they are now. And so the three of those outfits together hired a Pinkerton agent to come up from Portland, and they captured Krause because they knew who he was. He'd been identified. He wasn't as careful as he thought he was. But they had no evidence. So they hired this Pinkerton to come up and put together a circumstantial evidence case against him, to box him up, as the term went in those days. And the guy did it. I mean, he nailed it shut. He spent months walking around talking to everybody, both sides of the channel, who were in the area of the day, the whole nine yards, and he was able to tell the jury and the judge that, everything Krause did that whole day, that no one witnessed the murder or this Christie fellow that he kidnapped. So he was real, and he's the backbone of the whole thing. And when I was researching this, the Treadwell cave-in, I started there, and I kind of went out in circles, and I came across the fact that Krause had escaped jail like a week before the Treadwell caved in, or days before. And which I thought was fascinating. And then I found out that the same month was when the U.S. declared war on Germany in World War One, and we went to war. And then I found out, or I discovered in my research, that Imperial Germany had spent $16 million by the end of 1915 on sabotage and espionage and propaganda in North America alone. And I put all those things together, and I suddenly had this plot. So I have people in there who never really were here to my knowledge or were there to my knowledge. And I also have a lot of people who did live there. Mayor Valentine is in the novel. Some of the politicians who really were there in those days are there. I have people helping them who weren't necessarily there, but they're wonderful foils for being able to tell the story, you know, my story of what it was like in Juneau from 1915 to 1917.
I noticed a couple of familiar names like Charlie Payne and Cam Burns.
That's called Tuckerism. Science fiction. In fact, he just died here last year. I forget his first name. I think it was Charles Tucker. In all of his stories, he would use the names of friends and acquaintances that he'd known over the years. And depending on how he liked him is how he treated him in the stories. I still do it. Cam and Charlie made it.
You must have spent a couple hours in the historical library.
I spent 8 months. All my free time for 8 months worth in 1980-81, I spent in there going through original documents, looking at newspapers, taking notes, getting copies of front pages of newspapers. I didn't just want to tell a story and have it sort of be there. I wanted to give it verisimilitude, which is a fancy word for being true or real. I wanted to give it that feeling that you really were there in that time. So I went back and I looked at all the stuff that was going on, and I tried to convey in the story how that would affect my characters in the story while still going on with their lives. I mean, there's, like in our lives, there's a lot going on around us, and not a lot of it really touches our daily lives, but it's there, and it influences us in some way or another. So I was trying to do the same thing with this story. And so far, everyone that I've talked to who's read it has liked it. So I guess I pulled it off.
And we're talking about the book Treadwell by Stoney Compton. He used to live here in Juneau. Both the hard copy and the e-book have numerous photographs. You want to talk about collecting the photographs?
That was the fun part. Well, I'm a visual artist to start with. The only reason I ever started writing was because I couldn't afford my studio anymore in Juneau when the price of gas took a dip way back in the middle 80s, late 80s. People don't remember that much anymore, not with gas where it's at. But it did happen, and I had been making my living as a visual art, as a freelance graphic artist, and overnight all of my contracts dried up. People just said, whoops, can't afford that anymore. And so I had to give up the studio, push the etching press into a closet. And I have to have a way of being creative, or I get really tough to be around. So I started writing. I started writing short stories. But I got into the writing bit, and I can't write short stories, I've discovered. I have to write novels. And that's where I'm at here.
Peppered throughout the book are headlines from newspapers of the times, including columns from turn-of-the-century newspaperman Sterler White. It must have been fun looking at those old newspapers.
Actually, it's so much fun. The one of the things that I point out, but I don't beat people over the head with it, was the incredible level of racism that was prevalent, not just in Alaska, but all over the country at the time. And Stroller White was a perfect example. He was the perfect way to point this out, because he would talk about non-white races in the most casual, dismissive, enough to piss you off if you were one of them, in that in the category, and but it was accepted. It was, no one thought a thing about it, and I wanted to point that out because I thought that was a very strong and important part of our culture, not just in Juneau and Alaska, but nationwide at the time. Things have changed, and in the sequels, I'm going to revisit that in other venues.
How close did you feel like you had to come to real events and characters?
I'm sorry, what?
How close did you feel like you had to keep to real events and characters?
Not much, really. As long as I kept the time frame right, as long as I kept the events, the background events, consistent and accurate, I was happy with that. I had some of my characters doing things that I don't know if anybody really did here, but it still fit into the context of the time, and time and place. So it is a novel. It's fiction. It's about a real place. It's about a real time, and there are some real people who are portrayed in it. I do not at all say that this is exactly what they were doing or what they said or thought. It's fiction. Freely admit it.
The book is called Treadwell. Stoney, you're offering the book as an on-demand book as well as an e-book. What influenced your decision to stay away from traditional methods of publishing?
Well, that was easy, actually. It took me 11 years to write Treadwell, and I spent another 10 trying to interest agents and or publishers in same. I had over 125 rejections, and I finally got pissed off and said, screw it, I'll do it myself, and so I did. I started my own publishing company, and I published it, and so far I haven't made back my initial investment because it did cost a bit with the photos. You asked about the photos earlier. I went through the University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Washington in Seattle, and the Alaska State Library, as well as Library of Congress, looking at images from that time, and selected, well, in the online edition, the ebook edition, there's only like 33 images. In the print-on-demand trade paperback version, there's like 66. And I had to pay people to use each one of them, some more than others. But it brings the story full circle. You see what I'm talking about. You see the area I'm talking about. You get a feel. You know, these are I really wrote this for people who had never been to Alaska, and even for the people who live there and know the area. They can look at this and they can, you know, totally identify with what's going on in the story. And I'd love to have people review this novel for me, whether you like it or not. I'd like to know, because this is what I want to do when I grow up, is write for a living, and I want to do it right.
How can people get copies?
You can get copies through, for ebooks, if you don't have a Kindle. You can go through Smashwords, which is smashwords.com, and just type in Stoney Compton. It'll pop up with that novel and two of shorter pieces that I have in there. And that's every – actually, you can get a version there that will work on Kindle. And every other ebook version out there is there. If you have a Kindle or you want the print-on-demand paperback, go to Amazon.com and just type in either – Treadwell, A Novel of Alaska Territory, or type in Stoney Compton or Leonard Compton. I use Leonard Compton on, which is my given name. Some people don't know that. On the title, because it's historical fiction, and the other stuff I've had published is science fiction. So I was kind of trying to make a difference there. And also, this one was for my mom. She named me Leonard, and I thought there should be something out there with that name on it, too.
Well, it's an enjoyable book. My wife and I both thoroughly enjoyed reading it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And Treadwell is the first of four novels in the Gastineau Quartet. Considering it took you 11 years to create your 500 to 600-page book, when can we expect number two?
That depends on how well number one sells. What I need to do is I need to come back to Juneau, which I'm frankly looking forward to, and spending anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks just pretty much living in the historical library. And I've got the basic outline in my head for all three of the sequels, which are not going to be right after this one. The next one starts in 1921 and goes to 1923, but and the last one ends in 1945 in Juneau. But having said that, I need to spend some time in research, and right now I don't have the wherewithal to take that much time off from my day job, because I do still have a day job. And but if this takes off and moves, I will put it this way: 2 years after I retire from my day job, there will be the first sequel will be out, which will be Thane, the assassination of President Warren G. Harding.
Tony Compton, thank you for talking about Treadwell, a novel of Alaska Territory. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't know what it would be, and I really, really appreciate this opportunity, Jeff.
Tony, it's nice talking to you after all these years.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, you take care. Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 3rd of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Lucretia Mott, born Nantucket, Massachusetts, 1793. She was a teacher in a Quaker boarding school near Poughkeepsie, New York, and quit when she found out that she was being paid less than half of what the male teachers all made simply because she was a woman. She got into the women's rights movement, and along with Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she organized a convention for women's rights, the Seneca Falls Convention of 1848. Lucretia Mott, who wrote, "The world has never yet seen a truly great and virtuous nation, because in the degradation of women, the very fountains of life are poisoned at their source." It was on this day, 1841, Herman Melville, 21 years old, set sail aboard the whaling vessel Acushnet from the port of New Bedford, Massachusetts, bound for the Pacific. He didn't have much experience as a seaman, but he loved the sea. He was eager to learn. Whaling was still big business, 1841. Whale oil from whale blubber, the most widely available fuel for lights, also one of the most popular lubricants. He learned the ins and outs of whaling. He helped to harpoon the whales, harvest them, process their oil, also listened to the stories that his fellow seamen told, particularly of a legendary white sperm whale called Moby Dick, and all of it gave Herman Melville material that he was to use in writing his book Moby Dick. It was on this day, 1870, construction began on the Brooklyn Bridge, designed by John Roebling, spanning the East River between Manhattan and Brooklyn, the world's first steel suspension bridge and at the time the longest, 1,600 feet between its towers. At least 20 men lost their lives in the construction. It was very dangerous work. The workers were lowered to the bottom of the river in airtight wooden boxes to dig down to the bedrock, sometimes through as much as 78 feet of mud and boulders. It was hot, uncomfortable, the air pressure very high. Workers suffered the bends when they were brought up. The bridge opened in 1883, and for several years was the tallest structure in the Western Hemisphere, still an enduring landmark in New York City. And today is the birthday of J.R.R. Tolkien, born to English parents in South Africa, 1892. His father was working in a bank there. Tolkien, fascinated with languages, went to Oxford, studied classics, later English languages, came across an old English poem with a couplet, "Hail, Arendelle, brightest of angels over Middle Earth sent to men." And Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings takes place in Middle Earth and has a character named Arendil the Mariner. One day while grading exams, Tolkien discovered that a student had left one page in the exam booklet blank, and Tolkien wrote on the page, "In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit," which became his book, The Hobbit. Here's a poem for today by Mark Strand, entitled Harmony in the Boudoir. After years of marriage, he stands at the foot of the bed and tells his wife that she will never know him, that for everything he says there is more that he does not say, that behind each word he utters there is another word, and hundreds more behind that one. All those unsaid words, he says, contain his true self, which has been betrayed by the superficial self before her. So you see, he says, kicking off his slippers, I am more than what I have led you to believe I am. Oh, you silly man, says his wife, of course you are. I find that just thinking of you having so many selves receding into nothingness is very exciting. That you barely exist as you are couldn't please me more. A poem by Mark Strand, Harmony in the Boudoir, from his new collection Almost Invisible, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, it's the 360 North series ANCSA at 40. Join host Nellie Moore as she talks with people involved in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and celebrates the 40th anniversary of its passage. That's followed by Native Report at 8:30. Then an Alaskan story, We of the River, at 9, with the documentary Some Place with a Mountain at 10. All of this and more tonight on 360 North.
Time is 3:41 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, where we have a bona fide scoop coming up here with Michelle Moore, head of the Juneau Douglas High School Theater and Art Department. Michelle, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having me.
So the big scoop is that the Juneau Douglas High School Theater Department has been asked to participate in the 2013 International Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland. And also, you've been voted one of the best American high school theater departments. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
Tell me about these honors, if you could, please.
Well, at the end of September, I received a call from the American High School Theater Festival, and they said that our theater program at Juneau Douglas High School had been recommended for this award. And you have to be recommended from a college program or a college professor, and it was all kind of hush-hush. I asked who recommended me, and they wouldn't let me know. And so because I was recommended, they sent me a packet and asked me several essay questions that I had to answer, and then I had to send them some recommendation letters from the principal and some parents whose kids have been involved and some students. I sent recommendation letters from students who have graduated from my program. And then a 6-member panel from the American High School Theater Festival award panel goes through the packets and the essays, and they award high schools. And apparently it's a really prestigious honor to be asked to go to the Fringe Festival in Scotland. So I was very excited.
It's happening in 2013. About when are you going to go?
They have the Fringe Festival in August.
How many students get to go?
We can really take as many students as we want, but the problem is the cost, of course. So I'm looking at between 20 and 30 students getting to go. And, of course, it's going to be students who are hardworking theater department students, students who have worked in the theater department and have made the theater department their high school activity, along with some other activities that they do. But, you know, it needs to be the kids who have been working hard in the department and who are the committed members of our team.
How long have you been with the theater?
I have been the theater director at Juneau Douglas High School for the past 4 years. I've been directing plays there for the past 5.
What's the secret to getting great performances from your students?
Well, I think it comes with, I really believe in them. I believe in their talent. I believe that they can produce outstanding, wonderful plays that they can be proud of and the community can be proud of. And we just don't stop. We just keep working and we keep perfecting. And if I see them not getting something, not getting a scene, not getting a dance, not getting a song. I just keep trying to come at it at different angles to help them understand until they've gotten a good result.
Now, when I think of the Fringe Festival, I think of fire eaters and jugglers and stilt walkers and people who do stuff that, you know, is on the fringe. I don't usually think of the high school drama department going.
Right. They do have plays every night. So it is like a theater festival where different colleges, different professional groups, and then high schools who have been accepted for this honor go and they perform their plays every night and they get feedback, I believe, from judges. And it's just a time to celebrate how wonderful you are. And the kids, it's a two-week program, so the kids get to go to a lot of workshops, too, and learn from lots of different people from around the world.
Have you figured out what you're going to do yet?
No, not yet. This is all so new. I'm not sure what play we're going to do yet. But it'll be a strong ensemble play, a play that uses lots of the students in solid acting ways.
When you put your application together, you must have been truly surprised when it all came out positive for you.
I really was. I was very surprised. And I think I was more surprised at being recommended, that someone tied to this international festival noticed our program enough. And it's kind of an extensive recommendation procedure. I looked at it, and people who recommend you have to fill out a pretty extensive application. So I think that is what made me feel more honored than anything, to be noticed and that our kids are noticed.
When you got the package, or was it a phone call with a postmark on it or anything like that? What were your emotions?
I got an email first telling us that we had gotten this honor, is this congratulatory email. And then I got a phone call, and we talked for a good hour or so. And they are sending me an official letter and a certificate and everything through the mail.
Did you for even have a second think of it was one of your former students playing a practical joke on you?
Yeah, before I filled out all the paperwork, I got online and I really researched the American High School Theater Festival, and I researched the Fringe Festival, and I wanted to make sure that this was a real opportunity and a real award. I thought somebody's pulling my leg at first.
So the American Theater Festival, is this a festival you get to go to as well?
It is the high school portion of the Fringe. So what happens is at the Fringe, there are several nights in a row that the high school theater departments perform their plays. And so the portion of that Fringe is known as the American High School Theater Festival.
All right, Sam, you're going to be doing a little bit of fundraising before then, I understand.
Yes, we'll have to if we get to go. It is all the way in Scotland, and from Alaska to Scotland, that's quite a jaunt. And it's a two-week endeavor. So the kids are put up, they get housing for 2 weeks, and they get their meals for 2 weeks, and they get workshops, and they also get to travel around. They do different things every summer, but one of the things they obviously do is the kids will get to see a show at West End in London. And then besides that, they take them to different spots in England and Scotland, and they change that up every year. So I'm not sure in 2013 where else we'll get to go or get to visit. But it's a whole really big, nice package, and it costs a little bit per student. So we're going to have to really, the principal and activities director and I are going to have to sit down and talk and decide, you know, if it's even feasible and what we can do to try to, you know, get the money we need to go.
I'm talking with Michelle Moore, head of the Juno Douglas High School Theater and Art Department. They've been invited to go to the 2013 International Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland. Wow. I'm still saying wow.
I know. It really hasn't sunk in yet that this is real and it's a real possibility. The kids are excited. I'm really proud of them. They're good kids, and they're talented kids, and they work really hard.
So speaking of the theater department, what is the next thing on the horizon?
Kiss Me, Kate! So our musical will be February 10th and 11th, and then we'll wrap it up on February 24th and 25th. And it's a really fun musical about a theater, professional theater group that does the Taming of the Shrew. And so you get to see backstage, and you get to see what goes on stage. And it's a comedy, so of course things go wrong, and there's lots of silly characters and antics in it, and really fun songs, and lots of great dancing, and we have a professional choreographer in town now, and she's going to choreograph the dances in the show. Her name is Ritia Don, and she works for Juno Dance Unlimited now, and so I'm excited for the kids to get to work with her. And I just think there's a lot opening up at Juno Douglas High School's theater department for students on the horizon. We are also going to partner with Juno Lyric Opera in Hairspray next fall. So I'm excited about that. Juno Douglas gets the honor of getting to work with a professional director from Cornish University College of the Arts and do the musical Hairspray in the fall. So I'm very excited.
Sheila Moore, thank you so much for coming down to the station. When does Hairspray, not Hairspray, when does Kiss Me, Kate open?
Kiss Me, Kate opens February 10th.
Well, you're welcome to come down with your students on a June afternoon when you're getting really close to the time there.
Yeah, we'll be excited.
Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I think that's it.
This is Bird Note. In the late 1990s, Julia Parrish of the University of Washington started the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, or COAST.
In COAST, we train people to go out to their local beach and survey it. They're looking for birds that have literally washed in on the last tide. You might think to yourself, well, how many people actually would want to spend time going out looking for bird carcasses? I mean, it's got to be kind of messy and a little bit smelly. I thought maybe we'd get 10, 15, maybe 20 people, but we have almost 700 people in the COAST program now, and they collect data for us every month. I think people do that because they are attached to where they live. So COAST offers people a chance to learn more about the birds, about the natural history, why they're there, when they're there, whether that's something we should be concerned about or not. Information both local and regional empowers people to want to know more and to want to do more. And that, I think, is the essence of citizen science. I think that last century was the century of academic science. And I think that this century is the century of citizen science.
If you've been wanting to volunteer as a citizen scientist, we can help you get started at our website, birdnote.org. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation.
Come join us for the January Gold Street Music Concert on Saturday, January 7th, at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. The performers will be the Taku Gales, the Empty Oil Barrel Band, Steve Nelson, Beth Leibowitz with Dale Wygant, and Tony Tangs. That's Gold Street Music at Resurrection Lutheran Church on Saturday, January 7th at 7:30. Tickets at the door.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
In a crowded foyer on campus at Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage, Jonathan Jones addresses an excited crowd of adults and teens. This group is here for the Alaska Pride Conference, a gathering of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning people and their allies. For the first time, there's a youth track for teens. Jones, the conference chairman, explains.
Let them, you know, network, connect with other youth. The hope is that after this, they will continue the relationships that they form here. We have around 40 youth. We have people from Kodiak, from Ketchikan, Juneau, Homer, Fairbanks, Anchorage.
Jones says the idea for bringing LGBT youth together came from a concern about Alaska's suicide epidemic and how it affects young people in the LGBT community. One of the 40 teenage attendees is Kate Kearns. Kate runs the Homer Youth Community Gay Straight Alliance, or GSA. There are GSAs all across the state and the nation. Kate's group is the only fully youth-led GSA in Alaska. Most have school support behind them.
Oh, it is absolutely important to be here for me. I just got back from a workshop about brainstorming ideas for GSAs. There's a lot of adults in my community who are part of the LGBT spectrum, but there aren't a lot of teenagers I can just hang out with. It's been really nice getting to hang out with kids and talk about stuff that matters to all of us, common ground that I haven't experienced with other kids.
The Alaska Pride Conference is held annually. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Surprises too. So if you feel like joining in, if you want to stretch your legs, there's plenty of room in the aisles there. And I'm serious now, if you feel like going for it, don't be shy, just ourselves tonight. Here we go.
As All Things Considered, coming up at 9 o'clock tonight on KRNN FM, live from Windy Ridge, a recorded concert from a few months ago. Local musicians and local hosts, Scott Burton and Colette Costa. You're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO, we broadcast on these following translators. In the Valleynoc Bay Area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sirs Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, here KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on DCI Cable Juneau on Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard at Digital Channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktobo.org. Coming up tomorrow 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk about Saturday's Midwinter Vocal Festival with guest Byron McGilbray. Also be highlighting Big Brothers Big Sisters of Juneau as part of National Mentoring Month. Jane Lindsay from the City Museum will be here at the news about upcoming special events there. Shepherd Clown will be here to highlight activities in January at Eagle Crest. And we'll get an update on the Gustavus Community Center with board member Diana Berry. And right as Almanac Music, and more tomorrow 3 on a Juneau afternoon. And next is All Things Considered. The forecast for tonight, snow and rain. Snow accumulation of up to 2 inches expected. Low temperatures around 29 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, snow becoming rain in the afternoon with snow accumulation of up to 2 inches expected. Wednesday night, rain and snow with no snow accumulation expected. Thursday, it looks like rain is likely with high temperatures of 36 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to June Afternoon. Drive and walk carefully and have a great evening. With the music of Natalie McMaster.